Welcome to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph, as she explores the ever-changing music industry with today's top creatives, artists, and executives. Enjoy these fun and informative conversations with a little bit of love thrown in along the way.
This episode was recorded prior to the COVID-19 pandemic. We hope that you're staying safe and healthy, and now sit back and enjoy the show. Welcome to For Love and Music with me, Tara Joseph. Okay, so today's guest is pretty multi-talented. Not only did he have a first-class education at Berkeley, but he's also a published arranger and, I hear, one hell of a drummer. Without further ado, welcome to the show, music supervisor at Activision Blizzard Games, Eric Calver. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, really well, really well. I'm so happy to have you on the show. It's an honor.
Oh, it's an honor to be talking with you. Thank you so much.
So you've got to tell me, so has gaming always been in your life? Have you always loved gaming since you were a child? Or is it music that drew you first?
That's a good question. It's kind of a mix of both. I will admit I'm not that much of a gamer as much as I used to because I just have no time anymore. But I did grow up with a lot of gaming when I was younger, actually playing a lot of Activision titles, Spyro, Spider-Man, Crash Bandicoot, all those kind of things when I was younger. But I'd say music came first.
So what was the first game that you ever bought? Do you remember?
I remember the first game I ever played was either Sonic the Hedgehog or Super Mario Land. It was one or the other. Can't remember in the timeline which was first. I think Game Boy was my first video game system, and then Sonic and Sega was my first home system.
So when you were playing these games as a child, were you very much aware of the music that was part of the games, or did that come later?
Kind of a mix of both. I mean, I definitely was fascinated with scoring and film scores as a kid, especially with movies. But with the video games, yeah, it was a big part of the psyche of a 1990s kid learning music from video games and just knowing the scores. And when people would reference it, like I would sing it back for certain levels. So yeah, it was definitely a big interest in my earlier years.
Because I'm sure there must be loads of people out there now who obviously, I mean, the gaming industry is a $1 billion business. And I'm hoping going to be a lot of people listening today who are like, oh my goodness, Eric works at Activision. That's so cool. He works in music for video games. How does someone become a music supervisor for Activision Blizzard? How does that happen? it's like a dream job for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cool job. The headquarters is full of video game pods. When you're on a break, you can go over and play a game. You're just surrounded by all people who love games. You know, I didn't know this was going to be something I would eventually do. If you told me when I was 8 or 10 playing games, like, hey, you're going to be a part of the music team for these games, I wouldn't have believed you. You know, it kind of came from doing different jobs within music supervision because, you know, there's two sides to supervision. There's the pitching side and there's the choosing side. And I was on the pitching side for a short amount of time working for a library. And then I just, through word of mouth, heard that they were looking for a coordinator at Activision, which blew my mind. The company that I grew up playing games for was looking for someone in their department. And so I just got really lucky and very grateful to have the job after I think they had like 1,000 applicants and I was part of the final 8 or something. And then I just made it to the team and it was just amazing to be a part of it.
Well, that's brilliant. So in layman's terms, for people who don't necessarily understand what a supervisor is, a music supervisor, what is a music supervisor?
So a music supervisor is kind of the in-between person between the people that make the music and the people that are choosing the music for the production. So I'm kind of the in-between person that's helping negotiate, you know, to see if the people who own the music would like to be a part of our project. And we tell them how exactly we're using it, whether it's a video game or TV or movie, how long we're going to use it, how is it being used, this is how much money we have in our budget, and we check to see if it's available for us to license for the production. So we're not owning any music that we're using in a production, but we're simply licensing it out for a certain amount of time. So I'm kind of helping with all of that, the negotiating, the licensing, the creative with the person in charge of picking the music. It's a job that can be misunderstood as someone who just simply chooses music, which would be amazing if it was just that. But, you know, there's more legalities to it that I have been a part of for video games, for ads, all that stuff.
So obviously I mentioned in your introduction that you were at Berklee, which is like the premier music school in North America. I mean, that's like brilliant. So do you feel that your time at Berklee helped you with the kind of work that you're doing today? Did that give you like a sort of backbone for everything that you've now achieved?
You know, in certain ways it did. When I went to Berklee College of Music, I did not study music supervision or music business. I was a performance major on drums, and I was also an arranging major. It's called Contemporary Writing and Production. Really long name for arranging and composition. So that was what I did at school, which I still kind of do today. But there was a job that I did there. It was a work study job where I was getting paid to be in classes playing as an accompanist drummer for the voice department. It was really interesting because I was working with vocalists who were good singers, but they didn't know how to speak to other instrumentalists. Because typically, you know, growing up, the singer doesn't have to worry so much about talking with the band. There's usually a music director. But as you're getting older and kind of figuring out what sets you want to do as a singer, you need to learn how to communicate with the band. So what I would do is I would help the singers in the class create sheet music for the band. So let's say this singer was traveling or moving around different bands and wanted them to know their music, they would have to give them sheet music in order to play the song. So I was communicating with the singer and describing how to write out the sheet music for a drummer, for a guitarist, for a bassist, or pianist. And so I said, hey, can you just describe the drum beat to me? I know you're not a drummer, or they may be. And they would say, oh, I'm too embarrassed to do that. I don't know how to talk like a drummer or pianist. And I said, well, just beatbox it and I can kind of interpret it. So they'd beatbox and I'd figure it out in my head and say, is it kind of like this? And they said, yeah, that's exactly what I was looking for. So it was a skill of learning how to talk to someone who didn't necessarily know music or kind of knew music, but just described it and I can interpret it. So you flash forward to now as a music supervisor, there's many people I work with in the industry who are either efficient in describing music or kind of barely know what they're looking for. And they'll tell me like, I'm looking for something that's aggressive and exciting, but I don't know any examples or I don't know how to describe it. And I'll tell them, okay, well, give me an example. Give me some emotions and feelings. So it kind of prepped me for that because that's what I do now. I help people who are trying to come up with creative decisions who may not know how to speak music and interpret what they're thinking. And hopefully I can get to what they're looking for.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. So where did the drumming fit into all of this? Go on, tell me about your drumming expertise.
Yeah, so a fun fact that you may not know, I grew up with parents that are entertainers. My father is a professional magician. My mother was also a magician and a clown. Yeah, so my great-grandfather was an assistant to Houdini. Whenever Houdini would come into New England, well, I'm from Rhode Island, Houdini would come to a bunch of sheet metal workers in Massachusetts, like my great-grandfather, to help build some of the props. So while my great-grandfather was around Houdini and his team, he picked up sleight of hand tricks and magic. At the same time, my great-grandfather's daughter, which is technically my grandmother on my dad's side, was a singer. And she was a nightclub singer and a USO tour singer. And so there was entertainment in my family. And so my father picked up magic when he was 5. And was a magician ever since 5 years old. He's still a professional magician.
What sort of magic does he do?
All the above. I mean, back in the day, he'd do a lot more stage, but he does a mix of comedy, close-up magic, art magic, kind of all the above.
And how about you? Are you a bit of a, have you got a bit of a dab hand in this too?
So that's where I was going to. So I used to do magic when I was very little. My father and I were on TV in Rhode Island on the local Bozo the Clown show. Bozo's an American staple in clowns, and there were different Mozos around the country. And so I was on TV from age 5 to 7 or 8. I did magic and I was I grew up on stage as a kid. I would do all this stuff with my dad as his assistant. And by the time I was about 11, I was starting to get a little tired of it. And then discovered, of course, the Beatles and Ringo. And I just was fascinated by Ringo and wanted to learn drums. So when I was 11, I took drum lessons. And so I've been playing since I was 11.
I think you need to add into your bio your TV moment as a magician. It's like, oh my God, I would have had a whole other outlook on this interview. Seriously, that's hysterical.
Yeah.
But you still do the odd little trick.
I don't. I retired.
You retired? So the drums took precedent?
Drums took precedence. And yeah, I did drums throughout middle school, high school, a drumline captain, a first chair percussionist, jazz band drummer. Did all that in Rhode Island. Was an all-state drummer for Rhode Island and then went to Berkeley.
So how do you practice the drums now? Do the neighbors not complain?
Luckily, I have an electronic kit. So
you're very modern.
Yeah, but I just built out my garage into a studio and I'm starting to get things ready to record live drums in here. I have a home with my wife, so luckily it's not an apartment or something where if I played live drums, people would not be happy with me.
Have you ever done drums for any of the games? Have you ever played drums for the games?
You know, I haven't. No, that's not something I've done, but you know, the composers hire really great musicians out of LA or wherever they get them. But, you know, I know a lot of them through the film scoring industry that I was a part of when I first got here.
Well, you've got it all going on, haven't you?
I'm a little busy.
So tell me, going back to Activision then, so how long does it take you to put together the music for a game?
It really depends on the game and what kind of score or soundtrack they're looking for. With a lot of our games like Call of Duty, Spyro, Crash Bandicoot, or any of those kind of games, they have a score that goes along with it. So they treat it like a movie. So it's with sometimes live orchestra, sometimes synthesized instruments, and it's up to the composer on how they're going to do it. But those are scored out and worked on with our developers that create the game. And so we kind of all are working together to get that score together, producing it, getting the soundtrack together, hitting different milestones of levels and certain amounts of music that they compose for the game. Other games like Guitar Hero and back in the day when we had Tony Hawk, those were soundtracks and those consisted of songs that we licensed that helped fill out the mood of the game. You know, Tony Hawk is, well, back in the day, it was skateboard culture, like punk and hip hop. SoCal had a heavy skateboard presence, Tony Hawk and all of that. So, you know, Superman by Goldfinger was the big song that everyone knew for Tony Hawk and a lot of other songs. With Guitar Hero, that was a lot of rock. And when we relaunched it in 2015, there was a little more pop to it. So it's just kind of filling out the songs to fit the vibe of the game. So it's kind of a lot of different experiences with all of these games to decide what's best for the overall vibe of the game.
So Guitar Hero must have been super fun to work on.
It was really fun. It was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do because I cleared over 600 songs for the game. And that was my first real first experience into clearing a bunch of songs for something. Because that was my first job after I was pitching for a library when I started at Activision. They said, okay, we got to clear all these songs for the game.
What a job.
Get to work. Yeah.
I bought that game, and I'm not someone who games all the time, but I loved that and I was rocking out. Didn't do very well, but my friends and I would like rock out in the evenings.
Oh, yeah.
We must have looked like so ridiculous.
It's a lot of work to figure out where songs are in terms of label and publisher. And thank goodness for the internet, because back in the day, if you had to clear 600 songs without the internet, that's a lot of work and a lot of phone calls. So thank you to the performance rights organization websites like ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, PRS. I was just doing detective work for all these songs, figuring out where they were.
Do you think there are going to be other games like that, like Guitar Hero?
I mean, it depends on what people want. Things are kind of changing with games as they're going more to mobile. There's still a bunch of console games, but who knows? We'll see what the public would like.
So what does the future of gaming look like? I mean, obviously, you guys are working on probably some extraordinary new games that I'm sure we can't talk about now for confidentiality reasons.
Correct.
But where do the gaming companies see gaming in like 5 years' time? Because every year it's like developing at such a rate.
Yeah, everything. I think since the invention of the iPhone, things have just gone even faster than expected. The iPhone was in 2007. We're already 12 years in and we already have VR and mobile. And mobile's a whole other platform that we never really saw before. Back in the day, you know, the Snake game on a Nokia phone. And now you have, like, we just came out with Call of Duty Mobile, which is a full version of Call of Duty on your iPhone. So, you know, I just see more and more games going towards the mobile platform. There's VR as well. It's hard to say. I couldn't tell you. I wish I could tell you, but I just think there's going to be more and more innovation over the next decade.
I have a very close friend, actually, who I discovered recently does a lot of voiceover for Call of Duty. He does a lot of the sort of soldier, like, move, duck, to the left.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was really funny actually hearing all his different voices. But tell me, so as you know, and I bring this up when I interview all of my fabulous guests, the podcast is called For Love and Music. So let's talk a little bit about love. So again, I ask everyone this question. Has love ever helped you make an unexpected decision in your career?
That's a good question. Now, I guess I need to ask about your definition of love. Do you mean the love of someone or the love of something that I've always enjoyed?
I'm probably veering more towards the someone, but it can be something, if that's easier to answer.
It's tough. That's a tough question. But I guess a funny story, my wife and I met working at the Apple store together back in 2008. And we were acquaintances at the store, kind of knew each other just through passing, but then kind of just went our separate ways. And then she moved to LA in May 2009, and I was moving to LA in August 2009. And she saw on Twitter and Facebook, because we were friends on there, that I was moving and said, "Hey, I don't know if you remember me, but you know, when you move here, let's hang out sometime." And there was no ulterior motive. Either end or who knows, but I just said, sure, I could use a friend moving out here. And so we hung out. I needed a place to live and there was an apartment right next to hers that was open, like literally right next door to hers. So I moved in because I needed a place and we became best friends and started dating. And we've been together for 10 years and married for 6. But to get to the love and music part, one of the first jobs my wife had out here was working for a music publisher called Bug Music. And back at the time, I didn't know anything about supervision or licensing. And many of the people I met at her job were people I still work with today, 10 years later. And I had no idea that was going to happen. But kind of, I'd say my wife kind of helped me lead the way to potentially getting into supervision a few years later after kind of talking to some of those people over the years. So I guess maybe that answers your question.
That's a great answer. So, yeah, okay.
I just credit my wife for everything.
Aw, lovely wife. What's your wife called?
Yeah. My wife's name is Alyssa.
My wife's name is Alyssa as well.
No way.
Yeah.
How does she spell it though?
A-L-Y-S-S-A.
Mine is E-L-I-S-S-A.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, nearly snapped. Nice. Not quite.
Close enough.
Well, she's, as I've said so many times, the people are probably bored with me saying the same thing, but she is the reason this podcast is called For Love and Music, because those are the two reasons I moved to LA.
Oh,
for love
amazing.
And music. So there you go.
That's awesome.
So we both have Alyssa stories. How lovely.
There you go.
So just one other little love question then. Do you remember the song you had your first kiss to, or do you have a song that has a particularly romantic message to you? I don't know. Did you dance to a song at your wedding that is like special to you still? Or a lot of people say they can't remember their wedding song.
So funny story about my wedding song. So my wife is really into country and she loves Brad Paisley. I was never a big country fan until my wife kind of introduced me to some country that I started to like and respect. And I really respect Brad Paisley. So as a surprise, all of my groomsmen are, I'd say about most of them, except for two, were Berkeley grads as well. And I had my brother-in-law who I taught how to play the tambourine and my best friend from high school who could play some saxophone. So I arranged a cover of a Brad Paisley song to sing to my wife. I was going to sing and play drums and have all my groomsmen play instruments. And I was going to surprise her because we were having a live band. I asked them if we could use their instruments. And I was going to sing and play drums, which I had never done before. And I practiced for a whole year. And about a month before we were going to do it, a friend said, hey, why don't we do a key change at the end of the song and have you just do a surprise cover of I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston. So a few days before we got married, she said to me out of the blue, like, hey, you know what would have been really cool? It would have been awesome if you had all the groomsmen play a song with you at the wedding. And I just had to lie and said, yeah, that would have been cool. Oh, there was no time to do it. And so when we had a moment at the reception, I started to get everyone together. My wife was very confused. And so then I sang and played a song called She's Everything by Brad Paisley.
You have some very romantic stories.
I try. I do the best I can.
So, okay. So if you and Alyssa were stuck on a deserted island for eternity, what three songs would you take with you?
Ooh, that's tough because we have very different tastes.
Would you have to be on other sides of the island from one another or could you merge in the middle?
We're not against each other's music. We just have different likes of music.
Okay.
I'd say just to get along with liking the same music, I'll pick a couple of bands that we both like. So Brad Paisley would be one. She's Everything is the slow song. And then we both really like Andy Grammer. So I'd say, we like a lot of Andy Grammer songs. I'm trying to think. We like the song Spotlight, so that's one. And then if I'm just going to be selfish and choose one for myself, I'd say it'd be something that was by the Beatles or by Incubus.
Okay. All great songs, all great picks, all great picks. So what would you say, what's next for Eric? Where would you like to be in 5 to 10 years' time? Obviously, we spoke about gaming and where that's going, but how about for you?
That's, I never know. I mean, the thing is, my life consists of wearing multiple hats all the time. As the music supervisor of Activision, I'm doing that full time. At the same time, I'm also a gigging drummer, getting hired for various gigs around LA, as well as working with comedians on different shows. I was on a Netflix special, comedy special, playing drums for one of those. And I'm also a composer. And besides music, I'm also a runner, 5 marathons, and I really love doing that. And so, as you can tell, based on everything I just said, that's all
pretty busy guy.
And I'm married, and there's a lot to do. But the way I kind of see my life is kind of like a pie chart. And I learned this from one of my mentors from Berkeley. And the way I see my life is that every sliver of that pie is one of my interests, whether it's drumming, supervision, composing, running. Based on how you want to do your life, if you want to look at it as every week, every day, every month, those pie slices could be, you know, 90% of the pie, 50%, 1% of the pie. The way I see it is, even if a pie slice is 10% or 80%, the fact that you're still doing it within the month shows that you care and that you didn't give up on something. You're just not doing it as much this month.
Yeah.
Then next month you can do a little more. So that's kind of how I see my life because of how many interests I have. So in 5 or 10 years, I feel like there could be more pie slices. I feel like
you need to get a bigger pie.
Yeah. A bigger pie. That's a good answer. That's what I should say. I just feel like I'm going to continue doing what I love and with the supervision and the playing and everything and just keep going. And those slices will just move around over the next 5 years or more.
So tell us quickly, if you could play as a drummer with any artist, who would it be?
Ooh.
Who's your dream artist?
Oh, man. That is tough. I mean, I've been a Beatles fan for life. So if I could play with Paul McCartney, that would be amazing. Since I pretty much know their catalog like the back of my hand. I'd also say Incubus because I know their music like the back of my hand. Man, I'd say either of those. That would be awesome.
So one last question. And again, I ask everyone this, and it's not a depressing question. It's a sort of fun question. How would you like to be remembered, Eric?
Ooh. these are the hardest questions.
Are they? I mean, are they hard, really? Not I just want to be remembered as a lovely guy who was great on the drums.
Well, because I'm just so used to the questions of like, what do you do? How do you do it?
Well, I'm trying to break it up and make it a bit more interesting.
it's great. I love it because it gets me a little more personal. It's stuff that I don't normally get asked. So I'd like to be remembered as someone who I try really hard with everything I do. I put in a lot of effort and stress and blood, sweat, and tears into things to make sure that things are going well. And sometimes it drives me insane. And then when I get to something, I realize I've overprepared, which is fine. Like, it's always good to overprepare than underprepare. So I'd say I would hope people would remember me as someone who cared about the things he worked on and did his best.
Well, I think that's a great answer. And thank you. You've been an amazing guest.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
And honestly, so happy we were able to make this happen.
Thank you for listening to For Love and Music with Tara Joseph. For more information, you can check out at For Love and Music Official on Instagram, at For Love and Music Official on Facebook, and also visit www.jamartistgroup.com/podcast.